So we're going to have to talk about approaches to facing personal adversity. Bit of a mouthful. Normally I would speak for an hour or more on this, and we're squeezing it to half an hour, so I ask that there be no questions, and I'm happy if there are questions to speak about at the end. The Shlach HaKadosh brings a maaser from the Gemara from Hillel HaZaken, that he and some other people were approaching the city in which they lived, and they heard wailing and crying coming from a house. And it was clear to everybody that the people said something terrible happened in the city. And Hillel said, "Yeah, I can be sure it's not happened in my house. Certainly didn't happen in my house." And the Shlach asks, why would Hillel say this? You know, Hillel, we know, was an honor. It's one of the greatest honors that we know. And why would he be so confident that something bad, something painful, wouldn't happen to him? You know, why would he be so confident in his relationship with Hashem in that way? And the Shlach answers that that's not what Hillel was saying. Hillel was saying that it's not that something bad hasn't happened in my house, not that something bad couldn't happen in my house, it's that that wouldn't be the response of the people in my house. They wouldn't cry, they wouldn't wail, they wouldn't respond in that way, they'd respond in a positive way. Something bad happened, they'd know how to respond in a way that was productive, not screaming and crying, and therefore it couldn't be that it's happened in my house, it must have happened somewhere else. And a positive response to challenge and to difficulty and to suffering is how to do that is what I want to talk just for a few minutes about today. A lot of what I'm going to say, not so much what I'm going to say today, but a little bit is I learned certainly my general approach and attitude I learned from my late wife Ilana, Alayha Shalom, who passed away from cancer 5 years ago, who was incredibly positive throughout her whole experience. And even in her final days, was always, you would go up to her and you'd say, "How are you doing?" And, you know, she couldn't breathe properly because it was in her lungs, but she would take a few minutes to get it out, but she'd have a big smile and she would say, "I'm doing great," and she would really mean it. And that sort of developing that positive approach to going through challenges, I think, is a very important thing. So I don't want to talk too much about Hashgopa, but I will start with a few inyanei of Hashgopher, but I want to talk more about practical, how do you do it, as opposed to the concepts behind it. So the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos says, and it's interesting, I think it's Sefer Kahn that points out that, just as a side point, it says, Lom Shabbos Yisrael, but Af Lom Yisrael Tzadikim. It seems that Shabbos Yisrael is actually more difficult to understand than Yisrael Tzadikim. You can't understand Shabbos Rishayim, and you can't even understand Yisroel Tzadikim. You might have a half a minute to understand Yisroel Tzadikim, certainly not Shabbos Rishayim. That it's more challenging. Now, I don't think that we all appreciate that. The question that we ask is Yisroel Tzadikim, why do bad things happen to good people? But Shabbos Rishayim is considered by Chazal a more challenging question even. We just don't always consider the question. In Sefer Iyov, you know, if you look at the end of Sefer Iyov, when Iyov sort of had his reconciliation with Hashem, so to speak, even then, the Mefarshim say that Iyov is still bothered by Shabbos Hashem. Yeah, Yisroel Tzadikim, he got his head around. It took him 50 prokim to do so, but he got there in the end. But Shabbos Hashem, he can't deal with still. He still couldn't handle that. How could it be that there are evil people in this world who seem to get it good? That's more difficult. The question is, though, in what Rabbi Ani says, why does he say "Ein b'yadeinim"? You know, it's a strange lashon. Why doesn't he say "Anachnu lo mevinim"? We don't understand. "Anachnu lo yodim"? We don't know. What does it mean "Ein b'yadeinim"? It's an unusual lashon for Chazal. And I think Pshat. I don't remember where I saw this. It might have been the Shlach as well. But at any rate, Pshat. The way I understand it is that. Envia Daniel, it's like a moshul of a hot coal. You know, you have a hot coal, and you can see the hot coal, you can look at the hot coal, you can look at it from all angles, you can understand it, but you can't pick it up. Try and pick it up and you'll throw it out your hands. It's the same thing with Yisroel Tzadikim and Shabbos Rishayim, that we can understand it intellectually. It can make a lot of sense to us. It's not even that difficult intellectually to understand. But try and pick it up, try and feel comfortable with it. Try and have a relationship with it. Try and feel good about it. That's impossible. You can't do that. You're never going to feel good about it. And that's a good thing in a way. You shouldn't feel good about seeing Tzadikim suffer. You know, maybe you might understand it and you might be able to say, yes, I can appreciate why Hashem would do such a thing in his world. But to feel comfortable with it, to feel good about it, envy a day, no, it's not in our hands. It's not in our hands, and it shouldn't be in our hands. We shouldn't feel comfortable and good about these things. And therefore, in a certain way, pshat is not all that difficult. Pshat on why bad things happen to good people is not that challenging. What's challenging is to feel comfortable with it, to feel good about it. So, in terms of a pshat, what is it? How does it work? So, I often speak to, the business, so to speak, of Kiev, and I often speak to secular audiences. And this topic is one that bothers people probably more than any other topic in terms of outreach. And I will ask them, I'll say to them, my first question will be, look, what you say, why do bad things happen to good people? Let's define, we've got to define our terms. What do you mean by bad? Tell me what a bad thing is. So I'll ask a secular audience, what's a bad thing? They'll give me a list of things. What's a bad thing? Someone breaks his arm, somebody gets sick, somebody loses somebody who's close to them, the children are sick, whatever it might be. People give me a parnasa, a whole list of bad things that they say. So I say, and I'll give this example, even though it's a more secular example. I say to them, look, let's take an example. How about somebody who's minding his own business, walking down the street, gets hit by a car and breaks both of his legs, and he's got to be in hospital for 6 weeks because of that? Would you say that's a bad thing? So pretty much everyone will say, yeah, of course that's a bad thing, terrible thing, broke both of his legs, minding his own business, why should that happen to him? So I said, so let's say in this case he's in hospital and he's there for 6 weeks, and there's a young lady in the bed next to him who's also broken her leg, and they get chatting, they get friendly, and they get to know each other, and in the end it all works out and they get married and they have a wonderful marriage, wonderful relationship. So I say now, 50 years later, the golden wedding anniversary, is that 50 years golden? Yeah, whatever it is, the golden wedding anniversary, if you come to this guy now and you look back and you say to him, look, remember that time when you broke your legs, do you think that was a bad thing or a good thing? Now, I think without doubt he will say it was a wonderful thing. Baruch Hashem, it was the best thing that ever happened to me. I have a wonderful marriage, and that would never have occurred had I not broken my legs. The point is that we can't judge. Hashem has his ways. Hashem, we don't know what's going to happen 1 minute from now, 1 hour, let alone 1 hour from now, one week from now, 1 month from now, 1 year from now, 10 years from now. Who knows? Who knows what life has in store? Who knows how things will develop, how scenarios will develop? And for us to judge and to say, well, this thing in and of itself is a bad thing, is gaivadik in a certain way, for us to think that we know, for us to think that we understand. And I think this, if you read Sefer Iyov, I think this to a great extent is what Sefer Iyov is getting at as well, when Hashem speaks to Iyov and tells him, did you create the world? Do you make the leopard's child suckle from her? You think you understand the world, Iyov? You think you understand why what happens and what the ramifications are of every single thing? We couldn't judge. The reality is you couldn't judge really whether something that happens, whether a circumstance that's happening is good or bad until you see the whole of history almost and how it all played itself out, and therefore to judge that is impossible. But I would say even a step further than that, like I said, secular people will tell me that pain is a bad thing. That's what it is. Painful things, hard things, nasty things, uncomfortable things, that's what bad is. We Jews don't believe that. We Jews say, it says in Pirkei Avos, Lefum Tzar Agra, according to the pain is the reward. Adam Amal Yilud, man is created for struggle, man is created for work. There's thousands of Maamarei Chazal on this thing, and we're not here to be comfortable, we're to struggle. Life is about challenge. There's an effort, there's a work, there's a hardship, there's an inherent hardship in life. We're here in this world to use our bechira, to choose, and in order to do that, we need hardship, we need nisayon, we need challenge. It says, the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos again says, ba'asar nisyaynes nisnasa avram avinu v'amad b'chulam l'haydiya kamachi basri shel avram avinu. That shows how much Hashem loved him. But what did he gave him tests? That his wife was stolen by Tarei, that there was a rav and he had to leave Eretz Yisrael, that the kings, he had to go and fight four kings. That's how Hashem shows his love. Yeah, that's how Hashem shows his love for us, because putting us through challenge and putting us through hardship and putting us through difficulty is what helps us grow. And that's ultimately what we're looking for. And therefore, if pain isn't bad, getting back to my original question, how do we define bad? If pain is not bad, if painful things are not bad, then what is bad? then what do we define bad as? And in order to do that, let's just understand what good is, and then you see what bad is. What do we even define as good? What's good? Good is Ribbon Shalom. Good is the Tovah Meitiv. He's good and he does good. Good is God. Good is Hashem. And Dvekus, closeness to Hashem, is what is good. That's what's good for human beings. When we're close to Hashem, anything that brings us closer to Hashem is good. Learning Torah, mitzvahs, brings us closer to Hashem. That's good. That's what good is. What's bad? Bad is the opposite. Bad is something that takes us away from Hashem. Bad is something that removes us from our closeness to Hashem. That's what good and bad is. And when you understand the real definition, when you understand the tailored definition of what is good and what is bad, it's very clear the answer to the question of why do bad things happen to good people. The answer is they don't. Bad things don't happen in this world. Nothing happens in this world that intrinsically will take us away from Hashem. We choose that. We choose how we're going to respond to what happens in this world. We have bechira. We can choose to respond positively to a circumstance. We can choose to respond negatively to a circumstance. We can choose to grow from a circumstance, to understand, to try and understand what Hashem's teaching us, and to grow and become greater. We can equally choose to get frustrated, to get angry, to get upset, and to move away from Hashem as a result of a circumstance. And that's where bad things don't happen. Don't blame Hashem for bad things. We only blame ourselves. If we move in the wrong direction, that's the choice that we made. And you'll see that very clearly. You can see that two people have exactly the same experiences. One uses those experiences to move closer. One uses those experiences to move away. You see it even at the extreme of cases, you know, in the Holocaust, for example. You'll meet survivors who... I run a lot of trips to Poland. It's great killer of opportunity trips to Poland. And I've met many survivors as a result, and I've met many survivors who have moved away from Hashem as a result of the Holocaust, and equally I've met many survivors who've come closer to Hashem as a result of the Holocaust, and I wouldn't like to say which one are in the majority either. It's choice. I don't want to say that, you know, judging, who can judge, you know, going through such extreme of circumstances. However, the reality is that choice is still nevertheless there, and we choose whether it's going to be good or bad. Circumstance don't choose whether it's going to be good or bad. Circumstances are opportunities, and what we do with them is our choice, is our decision. Just a quick maaser of a guy I know in Yerushalayim, who lives in Beit Vegan, a guy by the name of Avram Kordish. I don't know if anybody knows him, I haven't seen him in a while, but he's a Amshinov Chassid over there, and he was Bal Shuva. Wasn't formed in the 60s in America, and he was at university in America, and it was the race riots in America, and he was a black guy came onto the university campus and he wanted to shoot a white guy. It didn't matter who it was. This guy from Kurdish happened to be the first guy I bumped into. Took a shot at him, shot him in the neck. He became a quadriplegic, paralyzed from the neck down, just from nothing, just minding his own business, walking along the street one day. And he tells a story that he was in unconscious for a while, and when he woke up, like I say, he wasn't from Bechlal, he was an atheist and believed in God. He said to himself, you know, he thought for a while, you know, it was very distraught when he learned the news, but he thought to himself, a thought came into his head, and he said, you know, now that I can't use my arms and my legs, what's life about? You know, what does life have for me? What value does life have for a person that can't use their arms and their legs? And he started thinking about it, and he says, a little while later, another thought came into his head. And he said, you know, why am I thinking about this? Is there any difference as to what life is about for somebody who can use his arms and his legs and who can't? Well, life is about using your arms and your legs. And when I could use my arms and my legs, it wasn't relevant to ask the question. But now that I can't, it is relevant. He said, "There's no difference between the two. What is life? What is life about?" He started asking himself these questions, and then it occurred to him another thought. Again, I don't know the chronology. I don't know the time sequence, how long was in between each of these thoughts. But he said it occurred to him another thought. He said to himself, "You know, if what's worse, you know, I could have gone through my whole life. If this hadn't happened to me, I would have gone through my whole life and probably never thought what life is about. Probably gone through my whole life never knowing what I really want from life." And he said to himself, what's worse, the person goes through their whole life never knowing what life's about, or the person goes through their whole life without the use of their arms and their legs? And he said to himself at that point, you know what, no question, better that a person goes through their whole life without the use of their arms and their legs, and they go through their whole life without ever knowing what they're living for, and not ever knowing what's important to them. And at that point he said to himself, well, he believed in God, didn't say thank God, but he said, you know, whatever, thank goodness, you know, it's a positive thing, and let me make it positive, and let me grow from it, and let me understand life better because of it. And he started to find out more, and he started thinking about Hashem, and he started to, and in the end he became from, and he's like I said, Namshon Avachatid in Bayit Began, he's one of the happiest people you've ever met. He is full of joy, full of simcha, constantly. And to me, that's the approach one wants to take. You know, it's opportunities. Whatever might happen, that's again an extreme circumstance, but nevertheless, it's an opportunity to he benefited from it. He grew from it. He says that it was a good thing that happened to him. He would have been a secular Jew for the rest of his life, not knowing what he wanted from life, and wasted his opportunity in this world. And this gave him the opportunity to really grow, to really learn, to become a from Jew, and to really have an opportunity to accomplish something with his life. We know, there is no such thing as something that happens in this world Hashem doesn't do for the best. I'm taking it to its extreme case, you know, taking it one step further. The Medrash tells us, the Medrash Rabbah says in Bereshit, talks about, you know, every day of Maisa Bereshit, it says, V'Hashem ki tov, Hashem thought it was good. And on the sixth day it says, V'Hashem ki tov ma'id, it was very good. And Medrash Rabbah says, what's tov ma'id? What's really good in this world? That's not good, that everything else is only good, but this is really good. He gives a few different answers, but one of them is Yisurin, it's not the one I want to look at here. It says, what's really good? The Medrash says, Misa. Misa is what's really good. That's what's really good. Everything else is only good. All other things are good, but Misa is really good. Amazing, amazing Medrash. What does it mean by that? So, firstly, you know, the famous Gemara, I'm sure we all know, that says really when a person is Nista, we should say the bracha of tov ha-meitiv, shouldn't say dayan emes, should say tov ha-meitiv. Why? Because it's a good thing for the person, the shomer, those they don't have, and the shomer is the one with the bein shalom. What could be better for a person than that? What greater thing could happen to a person? What are we sad about? Should we be rejoicing? It says, Yemosa Mashiach, we will feel that way, we will say tov ha-meitiv. Why do we not say it now? Because we don't feel it. We feel a loss. We've lost somebody. You can't say tov ha-meitiv while you're crying. It's ridiculous. It doesn't work. We don't feel that sense of somebody going to a better place. We feel the loss personally. We're focused on ourselves. But my wife Ilana Shalom used to say something else on this that I always found very powerful. She said, you know, people live for eternity. Even people live for a million years, but people live for eternity. No one would ever get up in the morning. Well, what do you need to get up for? What do you need to accomplish for? What do you need to learn for? You know, if I'm going to live for eternity, then what do I need to learn a sugya today for? I'll learn it tomorrow, I'll learn it in 50 years, I'll learn it 1,000 years, I'll learn it 1,000,000 years, I'll get there in the end, you know, I'll get through all of Shas when I get around to it, you know, I've got plenty of time. What's the rush? What's the hurry? What's the hurry to accomplish today? Oh, I get up a bit later today then, you know, I will get up today. I mean, instead of getting up for the early minion, get up a bit later minion, and for, you know, I've got plenty of time to get up for the early minion. We wouldn't feel that sense of urgency. The fact that Misa exists, the fact that we know there is a very real deadline, you know, and the pen is intended, then that gives us a sense of urgency. I've got to do something. I haven't got all the time in the world to accomplish. I haven't got all the time in the world to grow. I've got to know Kala Tere Kulei, and I got to get on with it. You know, I've got 70 years. Who learned Kala Tere Kulei in 70 years? I better get up early in the morning now. I better put in the extra hours. I better push myself. I better rush with things. That forces us. That tide mind. That's a wonderful thing because it means that we accomplish. It means that we do something with our lives. It means that we push ourselves and we don't just waste the time that we have available to us. That's sort of the Ashkofer. We'd have a lot more to say on it, but short time, time to squeeze it all in. I do want to share just a couple of ideas, three ideas I think I might get in here on practical ideas. You know, Torah is meant to be Torah Chaim. What do you do? How do you act? How do you live? On how to deal with adversity. You know, as much as we might understand Ashkofer's, might make sense, yeah, it's all good, Kalman David, it's all wonderful, it's all fantastic. When it actually happens to you, you don't necessarily feel that way. And feeling positive and feeling good when you are going through a challenging situation is something that doesn't just happen in Mela. You've got to work on it and you've got to focus on certain things if you want to do that. And I just, like I say, when I have With Ilana, I developed about 10 different approaches to this. I'm going to share three of them with you. So the first one I got from my Rosh Hashiva, when Ilana was ill, when she first got ill, he told us that we should do this every day, and we did it every day for many years, and I still do it, not quite as much, but I think it's a very positive approach. And that is, he said, count your blessings, count your brachas, focus on your blessings. He said, and what we used to do was 10 times a day, 5 things each, we would say thank you Hashem. We'd do it together, so we'd get a double amount. But we'd say, it's like we'd get up, and so, you know, let's say I'd go home now, and I'd say, okay, thank you Hashem for a nice breakfast this morning. You know, it was a good cereal and a healthy cereal, and I really enjoyed it. And she'd say, and thank you Hashem for getting me up early this morning. And I'd say, thank you Hashem that I got 2 minutes with my children this morning, and I really enjoyed that, and I really appreciated that. And she'd say, thank you Hashem for this. And just thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you Hashem. We have so much bracha that just slips us by. We have so much bracha that we just don't even notice. We're just busy running in life, busy caught up in the petty little frustrations that we get caught up in, that we don't have time to notice the bracha that's all around us. And to just keep drilling it in and keep saying, thank you Hashem, thank you Hashem, thank you Hashem, gave us a totally different focus. And even, you know, when she was ill and really struggling and really having a hard time, it just gave us a different focus on the whole thing, that life was not difficult and a hard life. Life was a wonderful life and a beautiful life and a gorgeous life that contained within it hardships. And I think that's a subtle difference, but it's a fundamental difference. But you've got to train yourself to feel that way, because if not, when a difficult thing happens, it just hits you. And you don't know how to deal with it. It just sort of knocks you for six, you know, you don't know which direction to turn. If you've got the context for it, if you develop within yourself a context that, you know what, life is good, life is wonderful, life is gorgeous, life is beautiful, there's so much bracha, I'm overwhelmed with Hashem's bracha. It's just bombarding me every moment, Hashem's bracha, you know, my eyes, I can see a beautiful world, and I can walk, and I can, I often give an example to these sort of young secular kids, that I say to them, look, if you had £10 million in your pocket, you just won the lottery, tax free, do you think you've got the check in your pocket, do you think you'd be feeling good? Think you'd be smiling, skipping your steps, singing a tune while you walk down the street? Most of them say yes, I would. So I say to them, okay, let's just take another example. I'm doing some medical research. I'm doing a we need some fresh limbs for our medical research. So it's a bit of a gory example. I'm offering £10 million for a leg today. We'll give you an operation, painless operation. Walk in, you know, hour later you hop out, you know, and £10 million in your pocket. You can have £10 million. Do you think you would do it? And unfortunately nowadays a lot of them say yes. But if you talk about both their legs, they'll say no, but one of their legs they might give up for £10 million. But anyway, a lot do still say no, Baruch Hashem. And I say, so that means your leg is worth more than £10 million. So you just told me a minute ago, you had £10 million and a lottery in your pocket, you'd be dancing down the street, you'd be singing, so you got £10 million right here, why aren't you singing, why aren't you dancing? You got £20 million, you got both legs, you know, and you got arms, another £20 million, you had your eyes, you had your ears, you had your mind, you had it all up, you're a billionaire. Why aren't you dancing? Ah, life's difficult. Life's hard. My little toe's hurting me. You know, that's why I'm not dancing. It's ridiculous. We get so caught up in the frustrations. You've got to train yourself to count the blessings and thank you Hashem, thank you Hashem, thank you Hashem. Ilana and I did that, and it made a big difference for us. Another thing that my Rosh Hashiva told us was, see where Hashem is and don't see where he isn't. Notice where Hashem is. You know, we, as we all know, that it's very easy to call out Hashem in times of adversity, you know, Mimar Makim Karsich Hashem, I called out to you Hashem from the time of difficulty. When things get good, we don't always notice Hashem. To be making praise to Hashem for the good is a lot harder than asking him for what we need when things are difficult. You know, in Parshas Eikev it says that, you know, you'll have good and things will come to you and you'll plant your field, everything will be good, and you'll say, Keshev Yesim Yadi Asilin Zachayelazet. You know, this is me, that's not Hashem. You know, Hashem does all sorts of things in the world, but I also accomplish and I also achieve, and it's very easy when things are going well for us to forget about Hashem and to not notice him in our lives. You know, there's a joke they tell of a guy who's in New York City and he's looking for a parking space, desperate for a parking space, he's got it in Manhattan, he's got a meeting, an important meeting, he can't find a parking space, middle of the day, it's impossible in Manhattan. And he said, they stopped davening. He said, Hashem, I'll do anything, you know, I'll get it for the earlier minyan, and I'll learn an extra hour a day, and I'll spend more time with my kids, and I'll be nicer to my wife. He gives a whole tefillah. And as he's in the middle of his davening, a limousine pulls out from a parking space. Not only is there three parking spaces there, for he doesn't even need to reverse in, he pulls straight in, turns back to Hashem, he says, don't worry, Hashem, I found one. It's all okay. So, it's easy for us to call to Hashem when we need him, but when he's actually when we've got what we need, noticing his hand in it is not always as easy, and therefore noticing Hashem's hashkacha is a fundamental thing. And one thing that my family do, that again my Rosh Yeshiva suggested, was that on Friday night we tell hashkacha stories. I think it's a fantastic thing to do. We're doing it for 7-8 years in our home now, and it makes a massive difference. We tell our story of hashkacha. Everybody has to find hashkacha in their life during the week, the kids as well, and we all tell it over. And what it does is it forces us to, during the week, I'm looking for hashkacha stories, you know, I'm wandering around and go, I got hashkacha story, anything hashkacha happened to me today, I'm noticing Hashem's hand in my life, and I've got to remember it as well, so I've got to tell it over on Friday night. I've got to tell over a good story on Friday night. I'm embarrassed if my kids have got a good hashkacha story and I haven't got a good hashkacha story, you know. It's and if my kids say, you know, I haven't got a hashkacha story this week either, so I say to them, yeah, well, Hashem wasn't involved in your life this week, you know, he just ignored you this week. There's always something to see. And it really has made a massive difference for my family in terms of their just awareness of the Ribbono Shel Olam, constant hashgacha in their lives makes a big difference to do. I'll just tell you two quick ones, two of my favourites. My sister-in-law was in town once, and she didn't have so much money left. She needed money for the tube back, and she put money into the machine to get a ticket, and halfway through she realised she didn't have enough money to buy the ticket even to get back, and she was stuck. So she pushed cancel to get the money back, and more money came back than she put in, and there was enough money to buy the ticket now. So there's but my favourite one of all time is when my son said, when he was a little younger, he said that he said his hashkacha story is just now he was opening the fizzy drink at the table, and it spritzed all over the place. But Baruch Hashem, it didn't spritz on him, it spritzed on his sister. So I think that was a bonus to sister. If it hadn't spritzed on him, it wouldn't be Sergei Ashkocha, but the fact it spritzed on his sister, that was real Ashkocha. but to be able to it makes just it's a different world in terms of the focus, in terms of the appreciation, in terms of the recognition of the Yad Hashem in one's life. It forces one to recognize that, and I recommend it very highly. And just final thing I will say, almost done, is this is something. When I was sitting shiva for my wife, I put up signs all around my house to remind myself of this, and I thought this was my bottom line. This was when all else failed, this was the thing that I focused on, that always lifted me back, that always refocused me. And as I put signs around my house that said, I can't remember the exact lashon, but we are only in this world to get closer to Hashem, something like that. The only purpose of this world is to get closer to Hashem. And it made me realize, and that's, you can remind yourself of that over and over again, that circumstance don't matter. You know, whatever happens in life, if you remember what you're here for, remember what your goal is, like this guy Avram Kordish, you know, you remember what you're here for, then the circumstances are not what's important. It doesn't matter whether you've got your arms or your legs, better to happen, you'd say Hashem, you know, really out in order. But what matters is that you have the opportunity to use your Bechira to choose Hashem in this world. That's what we're here for. That's the only purpose of us being. Otherwise, Hashem would have just put us straight away into Ta'ilam Haba. We're here to use our Bechira to come closer to Hashem. And therefore, you know, you can get closer to Hashem in the Bahamas, and equally you can get closer to Hashem in the Warsaw Ghetto. You know, it doesn't matter where you are, you have that ability to choose to be Dovuk to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. No one can ever, and no circumstance can ever take that choice away from us. You can even get close to Hashem in Golden Sleep. And you know, if you remember that and you focus on that and you remember that that's all that matters, the circumstances don't matter, then the circumstances really don't matter. Another three tools, like I said, I have a few more. I hope they are helpful for you. Wish you all a good day, and if there are any questions, I'm happy to stick around afterwards.
Yes, okay.
Tada, Tada, Shemai, Rabu, and